How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We have tons of stuff to talk about today. It's been 2 weeks since we've had a show. I was gone in the mountains last week, and thus we were unable to produce a new show. But luckily, it was a fairly slow news week, with the exception of the UFC show in Calgary, which we'll catch everyone up on this week's show. And then, jumping into the latest news from pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, including Raw 1000. This past Monday night, a huge show, which actually did a significantly larger rating than even I had expected. I figured it was going to do well. I thought maybe a 3.5, 3.6, somewhere around there. Actually broke a 4.0, 6.3 million viewers in the second hour. It was the most watched Raw in the last 10 years. A huge show. And most importantly, on that show, they set up pay-per-view main events for SummerSlam, Survivor Series, the Royal Rumble, and WrestleMania. We're going to talk about all of that here on the program today. The ratings, the show itself, all of the big segments, the wedding, Brock Lesnar, The Rock, all of it. And, of course, the CM Punk heel turn. Or was it? We're going to talk about that here on the program today. Plus news, including a brand new Strikeforce main event. Daniel Cormier is going to be defending his title, I guess. He's going to have one last fight in Strikeforce as a heavyweight before moving to UFC, and it is going to be against UFC star Frank Mir. What happened to Tim Sylvia? We're going to talk about that here on the program today. Mike is going to talk a little bit about the Olympics. We are, of course, in the middle of the London Olympics. We'll talk a little bit about the judo that is going on over there. Plus, Mike's going to bring us up to date with some info from Japan, a top U.S. star just lost a title moments ago. We're going to talk about SmackDown, Impact, all of the TV from this past week. There was a Dragon Gate USA pay-per-view last night. Johnny Gargano defending the title. Is he heading to WWE? We're going to talk about that here on the program today. Plus surgery to Great Khali. A TNA star is gone. Charlie Sheen, is he heading to SummerSlam? And so much more. We got more than 2 hours worth of stuff to pack into 2 hours today, so we'll be back after the break talking about that. Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline, Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, as we are nearly every Sunday. 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. I want to open up today by giving a huge thank you to Mike Sempervivi here, who held down the fort over at WrestlingObserver.com, doing shows with Big Dave Meltzer while I was away in the mountains. Did such a good job that people were calling for my resignation, but sadly for those people, I am still around. I am still around. I have not been eaten. So fine job, Mike. Excellent job. And I hope you had fun, because it won't be the last time I'm going to ask you to please step in for me.
No problem at all. Absolutely. It was great to do those shows with Dave, and both of you should probably alternate every once in a while and take some time off. And I don't know about going back into the mountains and searching for the pelt of Bigfoot, but, a little time to yourself wouldn't be too bad of a thing.
If you can get Dave to take a vacation, Mike, do it.
But good luck. It's completely impossible.
Yes. I wouldn't expect this one to happen. But you can try. You can try. All right, let's get into the news here for today. First off, Raw 1000 was last week. What did you think of that show?
It was fun. It was, those one-off shows, or what set up to be the one-off shows. Raw Roulette, when it started, I thought was a fun one. Noah always did a Christmas one every year over in Japan. Those types of shows, I think, are needed every once in a while. They're fun to do. You're 37 years old. I'm 36 years old. The average audience that's watching right now, many of them, have been grown with wrestling since the 80s boom and have stuck with it. And that showed in the ratings that it got. So anytime you're able to, re-energize people and find out there are still wrestling fans out there that haven't been tuning in, but they're at least lingering out there, that's not all that bad of a thing. Of course, the problem is going to be, since they got their fill of nostalgia and all these guys they grew up with in the 80s and during the Attitude Era, It's whether enough happened on Monday with storylines and such that they want to go back and turn back in this week.
Well, let's talk about the show. There were four big angles on Raw 1000 that we need to discuss, the first of which was the return of DX, which really wasn't an angle. It's just kind of a way to kick off the show, bring back some old guys that everybody remembers, have a reunion, and then beat up a geek, which is exactly what happened. And I was fine with it. I didn't think it was the best thing of all time. I will just say that I think most people liked it a lot more than I did. What did you think?
Yeah, I think it went on so long, and they were out there, you know, entertaining themselves, which is, you know, it's good. It's kind of, in a way, surreal after what Billy Gunn has said to see him back in there. But, you know, they were out there amusing themselves, so I'm not surprised. It's just one of those things that I think went a little bit too long. And at least it was DX where people were sucked in, but it started the show with a reminder to me that every week this thing's going to be 3 hours. And every week, I mean, there was one thing during the Attitude Era, you know, it was too long to me to have that 15-minute Vince McMahon opening and that kind of, you know, that never ended up stopping. And in a way, it has, you know, relatively recently. But with that said, they're probably going to go back to starting the show with 20 minutes of something that, you know, will probably have me trying to claw my eyes out about five in.
The DX thing was, maybe to me, it was. I was always a big fan of the original DX, and I was not as big a fan of the second incarnation. When you got rid of Sean and you brought in, you know, Billy and X-Pac and Road Dogg.
You were missing Rick Rude, weren't you?
It was what?
You were missing Rick Rude, weren't
That's
you?
That's right. He was part of the original DX, wasn't he?
Yes, but, he was.
But it was fine. They came out there. They did their thing. Everybody liked it. It did a huge quarter. So it was obviously something that people wanted to see. I often wonder what it is. Is it fans tuning in because they want to see these guys do what they used to do, or are they tuning in just to see how old everybody is now, or what the gimmick is? But people tuned in and they liked it. So I don't know. Who am I to say it was no good? I won't say it was no good, but the other big angle of the show.
Coming up with merchandise for DX, even though they poke fun at it, the fact that they come up with so much of it, there's a reason for that.
Yeah, I think it's probably because, like, the original DX back in the day, it was in fact really edgy, and then DX kind of became, with the second incarnation, to me, it was significantly more sophomoric. And it kind of was just too much for me. And then, like, the DX of the 2000s was not edgy at all. It was all about how much merchandise can we put on our body and hawk. And then Sean would act goofy and not know what was going on. And I don't know. Just it ain't what it used to be. Although, that's no surprise. Then we had the wedding, which was Daniel Bryan and AJ. And, of course, AJ left him at the altar because she'd been given another proposal earlier in the day by someone else who ended up being Vince McMahon. No, not to marry her, but rather to name her the new general manager of Raw. And I don't know if you listened to the Lance Storm show this week, but he made the great point. Why would anyone assign AJ, whose gimmick is that she's out of her mind, why would anyone give her the role of GM? And my argument was that Vince McMahon perhaps does not see AJ as a crazy woman. He sees AJ as someone who is conniving and scheming and was playing both sides, and at one point three different sides, in order to get what she wanted, which one would argue is exactly like Vince McMahon. The problem with this theory is that I also recall when Vince McMahon was stripped of all power, so I don't even know why he had the right to assign anybody as the guest GM. So there are a lot of questions here, and there's a lot of stuff that doesn't make any sense. All I know is that WWE is absolutely in love with AJ Lee, and she's going to be all over the show for the foreseeable future because of that.
Well, you know, Vince McMahon, when he comes out on his Titantron, it still says WWE chairman. So maybe, you know, we're all supposed to forget, like, you know, we're supposed to in the universe about some of those things. And your explanation on it would be great. And the fact that Vince McMahon came out there, and obviously it was for the thought for everybody there that, you know, the proposal was about, you know, something indecent that had to do with AJ and Vince, and everybody kind of gasped at that. But the opportunity to go ahead and do that, and that would have made sense and tie everything together, it was then. I think my two biggest things coming out of the wedding are, one, what was Brian doing talking to those men in white backstage that ended up going nowhere, and they'll probably have to tie up unless we're all supposed to forget about that again. And really, you know, I think it's SmackDown is a show that's kind of been forgotten about in some ways. So I don't think it would hurt anybody's feelings if we got a moment with Slick every week on SmackDown.
I'll say. Slick was awesome. Now, I will say, I am amazed, really, at the orderly gimmick, the orderlies deal, where Daniel Bryan is back there, and I don't know if they're orderlies or if they were supposed to be groomsmen, or he was back there for a throwaway segment with some men in white. And that's all everybody can talk about is who are the men? What was the idea? What was the plan? And I, honest to God, don't know if we're ever going to see those men again or have any sort of resolution to that appearance. It's like, it's kind of funny just because I'm not blaming anybody, but it's sort of funny. WWE has loose ends every single day on every single show. And usually people just ignore them or they move on with their lives. But the orderlies is something that people are stuck on. They're absolutely stuck on who are the orderlies? Why were they there? Who are the men in white? Where is this going to lead? And I'm sitting here thinking, I don't think we're ever going to see this again. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's going to be like a great explanation on Monday and it'll be, I don't know, Daniel Bryan was going to marry her and then have her committed or something. I don't know what the storyline would be. Everyone's got a bunch of different ideas. But, I mean, when I saw it, I didn't even ever think about it again until people brought it up. And then it was like, meh, they probably had something that they cut due to time constraints and we'll never hear about it again. But I guess we'll see. I don't expect anything to come of this.
Hey, the last time they had a guy in white that just went away after one appearance, it was Vic Grimes who would run down and attack Rikishi, and then it went nowhere, and Vic disappeared, and then that was it. So, you know, they do have a reputation for this already.
I think the deal is that the older Vince gets, the less he can remember, and the less sense everything is going to make. That's my theory of WWE. We're going to head to a break, everybody. We'll be back in just a moment talking more Raw 1000. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We were talking about men in white and orderlies, and no, I'm not having Mike committed. Although, I'm sure at some point during the recording of this show in the past, I've considered having Mike committed. But we're talking Raw 1000, the wedding.
Probably wouldn't be alone in that.
No. Slick, the doctor's style, Slick. Who
the
actually
man was paid in Yardbird.
That's what he said. He got paid in Yardbird. That's what he said. I've already been married, so I can't have Slick officiate. But I don't know. I don't know if my wife would have gone for it, but I thought Slick was the best officiant of all time, and I concluded that as long as the man lives, he should be the officiant for every pro wrestling wedding from now until eternity. The only one I could ever remember that was better was when Eric Bischoff, they put him in all the makeup, and he played the pastor, and then he ripped everything off. That was actually awesome. Because, like, nobody knew that was Eric Bischoff. That was great. But second to that, Slick, he was just so great. You know, he is a real-life minister. So it's not like this was his first gig. He's done, I don't know if maybe all of his weddings are officiated in such a manner. But he was awesome on this show.
Something tells me most of the ones he goes to, they may be kind of raucous, but I don't think anybody is chanting what at any actual wedding ceremony that he may be presiding over. But it shows you a professional. Now, I'm sure they probably told him that, hey, you know, you have to be careful for this, and, you know, depending on how you want to break your flow or something like that. But he handled that like a pro, and to the point where it was almost too funny, I guess, for what they were going for. As far as I was concerned, you know, the whole thing was just so ridiculous and over the top anyway that I'm completely fine with it. But, you know, the fact that he broke up AJ and Brian so much and she actually had to kind of grab hold of his hand and calm him down, I mean, it was certainly a raw moment for the next 1,000.
You know, Slick, I wonder if ever in his life he officiated a wedding, and when he asked if anybody speak now or forever hold your peace, if anyone ever spoke up, because the look on his face when AJ revealed that she was going to leave Daniel Bryan at the altar, that was the best part of all of this. He could not believe his ears. And sadly, that was the end of Slick for the evening. But man, talk about a dude stepping up. I thought Slick was great. That led to The Rock coming out. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, this Raw set up a number of different matches. And one of them that it set up was The Rock fighting for the championship at the Royal Rumble against whoever's champion at the time. And when he announced this, he got less of a pop than you would expect. Maybe. I actually wasn't surprised, because the manner in which they set this up was so lame. Something about The Rock, where they just can't figure out how to bring this guy back in a successful manner. And obviously WrestleMania was successful, but now that we're starting to get final numbers in for WrestleMania, it's looking like Rock wrestling John Cena in the main event didn't do a whole hell of a lot better than Rock as guest referee for John Cena versus The Miz. And if you look at what they've done with The Rock every time, it was like Rock's first match back in 7 years was a tag team match at Survivor Series where he teamed with his hated rival John Cena against The Miz and Truth. And why did he team with John Cena? Because he explained, my fans on Twitter asked me to do it. And first off, you're doing a match because people on Twitter ask for it. That's number one. And number two, even more preposterous, if you would have actually gone on Twitter, I would bet that 90% of Rock's fans actually didn't want him to team with John Cena. So that was a lame way to come back. And they, of course, set up WrestleMania and had the match. And now, what is his explanation for being able to get a championship match at the Royal Rumble? Is it something like, maybe, it was explained to me that I won the main event over John Cena at WrestleMania, and therefore I'm being granted a title shot at the Royal Rumble? He didn't even explain that. All he did was he came out and he said, I have been informed that I'm getting a championship match at the Royal Rumble. And everybody kind of cheered, but it was not anything even resembling a blowaway reaction. The story was, this was not mentioned on the show, but the official story on Monday night was that AJ's first act as the new Raw GM was to sign The Rock to a title match at Royal Rumble. I don't know why. I don't know what her explanation was. Maybe The Rock performed favors for her when she went backstage. I don't know, whatever their storyline is going to be. I hope we find out Monday. But I just thought that was the lamest way to announce that Rock was going to get a title shot at Royal Rumble. It was so, I can't even say it was anticlimactic, because there was no build whatsoever. It just came completely out of nowhere. No explanation for it. And when it was announced, I was like, what? Why?
You weren't the only one. Not that, I think they just got lazy and went, well, it's The Rock and people will react big to it, and boom, Royal Rumble, there we go. Then just kind of take it for granted that everybody knows what The Rock's deal is. I don't know what it was. I'm sure there were probably a million one things taking place where maybe just something like, you know, AJ meeting him backstage and announcing it. But again, there was another one where all you do, I've been informed by AJ backstage there when I was walking around meeting Mae Young's son, that she said, you know what, you shot at the Royal Rumble or something like that. I mean, just anything there. And, you know, again, they did a lot of right things in that we have things to look forward to, or at least things we think we're going to be looking forward to as the months go on here. But some of the ways that they got there, like that one, was just kind of, it was just completely ridiculous.
What did you think of the hand?
You know, I there was that part of me, because of my age and my immaturity, and of course being in college around that time, and maybe watching Raw and Nitro occasionally with the adult beverages and such. You know, there was something, it was stupid from the wrestling fan in me, hated all that stuff with Mark Henry and Mae Young, big time. But of course there was a little part of me that just, I could not believe I was watching this on a wrestling show, so a little part of me would always laugh. So to tie this together, that in a way, it actually really, really did make me laugh. I can't remember who came up with the idea, but the thought of Mark Henry walking by and just kind of like being surprised behind him and maybe saying something about child support and walking away maybe just would have made it even a little bit better. But I know that the people, there's a lot of people that actually hate this, and I'm sure if Lance Storm or Les Thatcher hears this, they're going to kill me the next time they see me. But with that said, for me, yeah, it made me laugh.
You know, on the topic of The Rock, the idea, and this will change. Actually, maybe it won't change, because they got an idea, and it's a big one, is Rock wins the title at Royal Rumble. And then we get Rock versus Cena 2 for the championship at WrestleMania. And I presume they figure that's going to do like a giant number. Probably do pretty much exactly the same as the last few years. But that's still a great number. It's still tons of revenue for WWE. And if you were in charge right now, Mike, would you have CM Punk hold on to the title through Royal Rumble and defend it against The Rock at that show, or would you put the title on somebody else?
I'd have Punk hold on to it. I've been a proponent of he and Sheamus actually holding on to their belts, even though I was a Ziggler guy. I just, you know, to me it made more sense for Sheamus to hold on to it. You're trying to build, you need to have titles make, you know, to actually have some value, you need to go back to that. And you need to have some stability, and you're trying to punch Sheamus into a different level, and people take to him the best out of everybody not named Orton or Cena. So I think it's a good idea for them to do it. And for Punk, too, it's more days that are racked up as far as, you know, even though it doesn't mean a whole lot, in the grand scheme of things, to say he had a epic title run where it's the 10th longest all time or whatever it's going to be by the time it's all wrapped up and said and done with. You know, I think it's kind of a cool thing to have. And again, it continues to establish him as just, you know, the guy. Again, underneath Cena and Orton, of course, but, you know, as a guy that's in that mix, and they need stars, they need to keep building on him. So I think that's a great idea. I remember talking 2 years ago or whatever it was, even last year may have been with you, about the possibility of, imagine doing a WrestleMania where it's a little bit of one generation against another, and they're obviously doing a little bit of that with the video game, with Steve Austin and CM Punk being on it. And obviously, Punk-Austin is a match you really want for WrestleMania. And, you know, why not? If that's the direction you could possibly be going, why not have Punk hold on to the belt that whole time? So as soon as he comes off, you know, the big title reign and a big title loss to The Rock, he can just kind of be lifted right back into something else going into WrestleMania.
Well, I know that... Speaking of old legends and mixing and that sort of thing, the rating was such on Monday, and the biggest numbers, we mentioned, by the way, hour two, 6.3 million viewers for Raw, which is a ridiculously large number. The biggest segments were largely those involving nostalgia, those involving The Rock and DX, and you know, the guys from a different generation got those fans to tune back in. They have now decided that they are going to try to continue what they had done leading up to Raw 1000, which is every week on the show, you're going to see a different legend coming back. Kind of similar, I don't know if they're always just going to be a guy coming out to beat Heath Slater, or if they're just going to have somebody making an appearance, but they want to bring a guy back every week and try to have a nostalgia segment on every show. And I guess we'll see. It was a cool thing leading up to Raw 1000. It was a cool thing on Raw 1000. But I think if you start to do it every single week, then the next time you want to build up a big show and you decide to bring back legends, well, you've already have legends on the show every single week.
I think there's a way to do 31 flavors now that, you know, is putting a lot on their shoulders. But there's a way you can have somebody in the mix every week, depending on who they are on the scale, and actually make it work. But who knows?
Luckily, there are a lot of legends. We're going to be right back, everybody, with another legend, Mike Sempervivi.
Woohoo!
Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. We're joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for 2 hours. hours every Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, and streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. Want to send a big shout out, Dave Reed and Doug Brown, our newest affiliates, the Ohio Sports Radio Network. You can check it out, ohiosportsradionetwork.net. They are the newest carriers of Wrestling Observer Live. And of course, as noted, Sports Byline USA Radio Network over-the-air affiliates all over the United States. And if you can't get enough of Wrestling Observer Live every Sunday, you can always head to WrestlingObserver.com. Daily radio shows. Sometimes as many as 4 brand new radio shows in a single day. If you love pro wrestling or mixed martial arts, you are missing out. We've done tens of thousands of hours of audio in the past 6-7 years up at WrestlingObserver.com. Every show we've ever done is archived on the website. It is $10.99 per month to sign up. Credit cards, Visa, MasterCard, PayPal, a million ways to sign up. If you go to WrestlingObserver.com, $10.99 a month, you sign up, you go into the archives, every show we have ever done. If you have a commute, if you work out at the gym, if you just love listening to wrestling and mixed martial arts audio and you can't get enough, not only will you get all of those new shows that we do every single day, but as noted, tens of thousands of hours of audio that you can jump in and start listening to right now. Was there a big story in the past 6 years that really caught your interest? You can go back and listen to us talking about it. Every show we've ever done, including interviews with some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling. Ric Flair has been on the show. Bruno Sammartino, Bret Hart, Lance Storm is on the show every other week. The list goes on and on. Check it out at WrestlingObserver.com. I've said it a million times. If you love this radio program and you only get to hear it once per week, I guarantee that you will love a subscription to WrestlingObserver.com. In fact, if you go up there right now, scroll down the right-hand side of the page, there's a listing of our latest 3 free radio shows. Download them. They're absolutely free. Listen to them. And if you like what you hear, if you like the audio quality, sign up today, and you will not regret it. We've been talking Raw 1000 here on the program. And, Mike, what were your thoughts on the Brock Lesnar Triple H segment that also involved Paul Heyman and Stephanie McMahon's return to Raw?
My impressions were Stephanie McMahon and Paul Heyman don't really like each other. At least that's the impression I got. It's so weird because I don't know exactly what Brock Lesnar's contract is. I don't know exactly what the politics are. I don't understand. Obviously, a lot of what has gone on with Brock Lesnar and that company, I don't get it. Him getting knocked out, I guess it was fine for what it was, and obviously builds up to the SummerSlam match. I know Brock Lesnar can lose to Triple H, and it's no big deal. I don't understand why that would be, especially if Brock's going to be there for WrestleMania next year, it's going to be with The Undertaker or somebody else, and no, he doesn't have to win a bunch of matches, but it would mean a lot more if he did do something along this line. And again, I don't know if this whole feud and the whole storyline and situation and everything that's gone on with it is just, you know, backstage things playing out in front of me, but as a fan, I'm a little bit confused by it, and I don't really understand what exactly is going on, and it's making me care less and less about it. I mean, the thought of, you know, him, he should have beaten Cena. I understand why, but it would have made more sense. If he beats Cena, he goes on and beats Triple H, and then, you know, who knows what can stop him, and then it could have been The Rock or The Undertaker or something else. For me as a viewer, I don't know exactly what they paid him, but I would question if they're getting all of their worth out of it. Both he and, frankly, Paul Heyman, who, again, he'd be a guy I'd be having on there as an antagonist every single week on TV.
You know, it's kind of interesting that I watched it, and I know that there have been times where Stephanie and Paul didn't get along at all, in the sense that she largely thought of him as a parasite, just like she called him on the program on Monday night. But we had Court Bauer on the show a couple of days ago, who was, in fact, a writer for WWE during that period on the, I believe it was SmackDown brand. But anyway, the point is he was one of the main writers during that period. And he said that when Paul Heyman was released the second time, around the time of the December to Dismember pay-per-view, which was an utter disaster, when he was released around that time, he said that Stephanie was actually very bummed out about it. And that Paul, since coming back for that last run, had behaved himself and they had gotten along well and everything was going great. And she was actually very disappointed when he was released. So I don't know what to make of Monday's segment. I don't know if it was, I don't know if maybe the last few years she's heard one too many things about how brilliant Paul was and how not brilliant she was and how people want Paul back. And it was stuck in her craw and a lot of stuff came out here, or if maybe somebody else wrote the verbiage here, like a Vince McMahon, for example. I don't really know what happened, but it was fascinating TV. It does, you know, beg the question, what does this have to do with anything in the Triple H?
Well, that's the whole thing. I mean, why did they then take it back to ECW, WWF, my dad, you know, you're a parasite? Why did they take it back to that instead of dude who's got two lawsuits against the, you know, the CEO of the company or whatever Triple H's role is? I can't even remember what it is anymore on TV after that whole Laurinaitis thing, but whatever his actual, you know, role is, and, you know, the two lawsuits that way and trying to bring down his company or her company, why not that then? Because that would have actually, you know, played into the story. I know it was nostalgia night, but if you didn't want us to go back and think of the fact that they probably hate each other, maybe you should have focused on something leaning into, you know, SummerSlam, you know, about what's going on to sink your teeth into. Now, she has now assaulted him. So is that going to be lawsuit number three? Or, you know, obviously Triple H got what he wanted, which was the match against Brock Lesnar, but what now happens to those, you know, two lawsuits?
I have no idea. I assumed that they would do some sort of storyline where, you know, if Triple H wins, they drop the lawsuits. But if Brock Lesnar wins, then Paul Heyman gets to take over the company. I mean, hello, easy storyline. And I figure that Brock Lesnar's losing anyway, so you may as well just put it all out on the line there. But maybe they'll add that on Monday. I don't know. It seems like it's a little late since Heyman already agreed to the match with no stipulations. But maybe they'll do a contract signing and, you know, Paul will go back on it until this stipulation is put into the contract. I don't know. I'm just trying to make sense of the whole thing. But, Mike, if you were a betting man, and I, of course, am not, but if you were a betting man, what are the Todd's odds that Triple H loses at SummerSlam?
You know, I think let's say 25%. I mean, I still
Whoa. You give Brock a 75% chance of winning?
Yes. You know why, Brian? Honestly, I'll stick with this. If Triple H, if you look at it from a non-TV point of view, Triple H can say, you know what, I brought this guy back. I did everything for him. He held us up on dates. Look at me. You know, look, take an example, everybody. I laid down for him at the 20th annual SummerSlam. I can see that being more the case. And then him being able to bitch about it or run him on the way out, I can see that being more of a case. And to me, it would make far more sense to do if you're Triple H than, and it makes more sense from a pro wrestling TV storyline point of view as well. I mean, it just to me, it makes more sense to do that than it is the other way around. Now, honestly, I guess the legitimate odds are there's a 85 to 90% chance Triple H is winning this, especially after what happened with Lesnar and Cena, and especially because they just don't. There's been a week that has gone on where they didn't even talk at all about the Brock Lesnar storyline outside of bringing up one little thing a couple weeks ago on Raw. So, yeah, you're probably right. I just would like to hold out some hope that even if it's just purely for professional, non-in-ring reasons, that Triple H goes ahead and does the job. Again, even if it's for all the wrong reasons, it would, to me, make the more sense coming out of this thing if that's what's to happen.
I would say that we finally found that point here on the show where I need to get you committed. No. I would say there's a 100% chance that Triple H wins the match. You want to know why? Because let's just say that they're going to go with Brock Lesnar and The Undertaker at WrestleMania, which is what I think they're going to do. Maybe. This is how I envision their thinking. I think they figure that maybe if Brock Lesnar ran roughshod over everybody and beat everyone and went into WrestleMania undefeated against The Undertaker, and it was the undefeated Brock Lesnar, former UFC heavyweight champion, against a streak, I think they think that maybe that would boost the buy rate. But they're already going to have Rock versus John Cena for the championship. It's WrestleMania, which means a million buys anyway. I think they think that it doesn't matter who Brock faces or what he does or whether he goes in undefeated or not. I think that they think that the WrestleMania name and John Cena versus Rock for the title is going to sell all of the buys, and that Brock Lesnar is not going to add a single buy that they wouldn't have gotten otherwise. Therefore, I think they think it doesn't matter whether he goes into WrestleMania having beaten everyone or having lost to everyone. I think they think that everyone is going to presume, no matter what, that The Undertaker is going to beat Brock Lesnar. And more so than anything else, I've watched a million Triple H matches and storylines in my life, and Triple H is the babyface. And this feud started out with Brock Lesnar breaking his arm with a Kimura, and he put him out of action for months. And granted, Hunter half-ass sold it. He kind of had a brace here and there. Sometimes he did, sometimes he didn't. And then one day he was just magically healed. But still, to kick this whole thing off, Brock broke his arm. And I'm sure that Brock is going to lay him out. Maybe Stephanie will get bumped sometime in the next couple of weeks. Something bad is going to happen. And then at the big show, Triple H is going to have a long match with him, probably close to a half hour, and then he is going to probably either hit him with a sledgehammer or not, and he's going to hit him with a pedigree, and he's going to pin him right in the middle of the ring. I mean, I can't even envision anything other than that happening.
Hey, I believe you. You're probably right, but it doesn't mean it's right. You know,
but at this point, do you really think it matters after he already lost to John Cena in his first big match back? I don't think it matters at this point.
No, but I think you can get far more out of him than you can. You could sell more, you know, you could do something. Sell more, sure, do something. If you're going to have him there and you have a dearth of stars anyway, I use more, him more to your advantage, and I don't believe that they're doing that. And again, yeah, you're probably right. And look, WrestleMania, everyone that is going to pay for a professional wrestling event, for the most part, in that year, they're going to buy WrestleMania. I mean, that's all of them. You know, whether that number goes up or down, that's the max you're going to get. So, yeah, I understand that WrestleMania is going to sell itself. They can make their whole year off WrestleMania if they wanted to with the amount of money it brings in now. But, again, it would mean more. Again, I don't know. I just don't think you're using a guy to their best advantage. Again, to me as a viewer watching this and knowing that they need stars and knowing who Brock Lesnar is and his history there and knowing how all the things that could play out, they're not using them right. And if this is what they're going to do, that's fine, but how does this so Triple H wins? So then what? Why do I want to see Brock Lesnar face off against anybody? Because now he's lost two in a row. Who cares?
Well, I think the idea is that he's going to lose to Triple H and you won't see him again until about Royal Rumble, and they figure that, fans don't remember anything. He'll be a fresh star when he comes back in 6 months. I think
Like Rock really boosting up the SummerSlam pay-per-view, right?
Sure, yeah.
That worked out.
All right, we'll be back in a minute talking more. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, joins me as he does every Sunday. Sports Byline, USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208. Streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. We got a very short segment here. Mike and I have been bantering back and forth about Brock Lesnar. Should he win? Should he lose? Will he? Won't he? Anything you'd like to add to that before we move on here?
No, not really. Stephanie looked good.
Thank you, Todd. No. I think that SummerSlam is going to do very well. I think that you've got Brock Lesnar versus Triple H. I think that you've got Charlie Sheen versus Daniel Bryan, which you can talk more about in hour two. And I think
LA's been a good crowd for them.
That's what?
LA's been a good crowd for them every time they've been there.
That's right. The idea is that they are going to run LA for SummerSlam every year until they get sick of it. And I think as long as they get all of the media in the LA market, and as long as they can get guys like Charlie Sheen to appear on Raw and build up SummerSlam, I think they're going to continue to have it in LA. I got to tell you, I could not believe, first off, when they announced that Charlie Sheen would be tweeting during Raw, this was before he gave up Twitter, I was like, well, you know, Charlie Sheen doesn't really tweet, but he's got a guy, a tweet master, who he tells what to tweet. So really, Charlie Sheen's probably going to be watching the show. And that, to me, I just found mind-boggling. Charlie Sheen's actually going to watch Raw? Like, doesn't he have something better to do? Like, I can't say it on a family program, but you know what I mean. So then he quits Twitter, and I'm like, oh man, poor WWE, they're going to be angry. And then it was kind of weird because they didn't even... Once he quit Twitter, it's like they stopped promoting that he was going to be on the show. I guess they just figured, well, you know, we got enough stuff that we don't need to promote. Or maybe they were like, you know, can you do the show via Skype? And he's like, if I'm home, I'll do it. I'll tell you on Monday. And so they didn't know until the day of the show. I don't know what the whole deal was with Sheen. But when I saw Charlie Sheen on Raw live via Skype, I was absolutely baffled. And we're going to talk more about this after the break. But Charlie Sheen, everybody... It's looking like he's going to SummerSlam. We'll be back in just a moment. Top of the hour break. Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Tons of stuff to talk about today in the first hour. We actually spent the entire hour talking Raw 1000. We're going to talk more news, take your phone calls here in the second hour. Before the break, we're talking about Charlie Sheen. I was baffled to see Charlie Sheen on Raw. Charlie Sheen is like a legitimate big-time A-list star, and I can't remember the last time WWE actually had a big-time A-list star that not only just appeared on the show, but appears like he's heading towards a WWE pay-per-view, that being SummerSlam and a confrontation with Daniel Bryan. Were you baffled, Mike, as I was?
I'm a little baffled in you being so hyped on him as an A-list star. Yeah, it's their biggest one, but it depends on what realm that you're in that you would put Charlie Sheen into that A-list category of someone that you would want on your side. I mean, this isn't exactly, Denzel Washington here who would be considered an A-list star. This is a guy, you know, again, and I guess, look, if it works, it works. So I really can't blame him there. It is the biggest name that they've had in quite some time, but... You know, give me a Hugh Jackman type or somebody like that who can at least play into the role a little bit better than Charlie Sheen. I think I wasn't enthralled with his performance on Monday night. And, you know, again, you know, I don't blame him for it exactly. He's getting paid to do a thing, but I'm surprised that there's not other people out there who you could have plugged in there that would have been, again, a little bit better, especially if it was leading into that person and Daniel Bryan at SummerSlam. It would make more sense to me to be somebody else, but you know what? Who's to know, I guess, right now? Because, again, it is the biggest name that they've had in quite some time.
Doesn't look like they're going to have a wrestling match. The latest is they're probably going to do the deal where Daniel Bryan dares him to show up. Charlie Sheen shows up. Maybe Daniel Bryan lays a minor beating on him, and then something happens, slips on a banana peel, or maybe Charlie Sheen just slaps the crap out of him. Something's going to happen, so they hope...
Charlie Sheen brings back Ric Flair to face Daniel Bryan, and we're all winners.
Don't hold your breath on that one.
I know.
But anyway, they're going to shoot an angle at SummerSlam, everybody. And we'll give some thoughts on that after the break. Think about it, Mike. What angle would you shoot with Charlie Sheen and Daniel Bryan? Back in a moment, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We're here for another hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Raw 1000 has been the subject for the last hour. We're talking about Charlie Sheen and Daniel Bryan. Charlie Sheen likely showing up at SummerSlam coming up in August for a confrontation with Daniel Bryan that they are hoping will make all of the major media news sites and television shows. And Mike, how would you build this up?
Well, I guess I could tie things together. Charlie Sheen, I don't know. I never saw the movie Anger Management with Jack Nicholson and Adam Sandler. But I know Charlie Sheen's got the show, Anger Management, which is one of the reasons he probably agreed to do anything with WWE in the first place, which was to promote that show.
That and money, yes.
I guess you can go ahead and tie that together with maybe what those people were doing in White backstage, and maybe Daniel Bryan's going to flip out so much where he's got to go to Anger Management, and maybe they do something with it that way. I have no idea.
That is actually a great idea I had not even considered.
You know, because the only other thing you could do besides that is have Charlie Sheen play antagonist to Bryan. He's already played him out as not being able to be good with the ladies. He's an Oompa Loompa. He's a goat face. You know, it's how, unless you're going to have Charlie Sheen there to get revenge or to say, or for Bryan to get revenge on or to save somebody's honor or something like that, what else could it be besides Sheen being a complete antagonist to Bryan?
I like the idea of maybe somehow you have to tie in the anger management thing. I'm not going to think about this now. Obviously, that would, you got to find some way to get Charlie Sheen there, but not spend so much money that SummerSlam doesn't make any money. So maybe you could do some vignettes every single week where Daniel Bryan goes to a different anger management clinic every week, and each one is a disaster. And then finally, Sheen is like, I'll take care of you at SummerSlam. Or I don't know. I'd have to think about this for a while. But a tie-in, I think, would actually be a hell of an idea.
Yeah, to me, it's the best way to go, again, without... I don't know what else to do, you know, unless you put Bryan on a losing... I don't know, actually, what you would do otherwise. Again, it would all depend on how many appearances you have Charlie Sheen for or how much you can get him to do, even if it is one day of just cutting, you know, a bunch of post-match things to flash up there on the big screen after the match where, yeah, I don't know. Again, it would depend on him, but that's the only thing that can really come to me to mind right now that again, without using, like, logical wrestling stuff, which this, is, you know, obviously is not, I don't know what else you would do.
Let's take a phone call here. You are on the air, Wrestling Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, Brian, this is Derek from New York.
Derek, what's up?
Hey, I was just with how, you know, things have been going with how with Raw 1000, how they kind of alluded to how Rock and Cena are going to be the main event. Is that something that's set in stone, or is there something that could be different, maybe Punk being in the main event, maybe Lesnar being in the main event? I was just wondering what you thought about that.
I'd say about 99% positive that Rock versus Cena for the title is going to be the main event of WrestleMania. WrestleMania is like one of those shows where they kind of bill it as multiple main events. I'm sure that like Rock versus Cena, I would almost guarantee is closing the show. And CM Punk, I'm sure, is going to be in a big match that's going to be considered a main event, but not the last match on the show. Undertaker and Brock Lesnar is going to be considered a main event, but probably not the last match on the show. I mean, unless they have something that they just figure, you know, we can't close the show unless we put this match on last, I would expect Cena and Rock to close. And since John Cena is still going to be the company's number one babyface and top merchandise seller and everything next year, you know, him winning the title is going to be what you're going to want to close WrestleMania with. So that would be my prediction.
All right, thanks, Brian.
All right, thanks very much for the call. Mike, any thoughts on that?
No, I agree, and it'll be interesting to see. You know, it depends on how many guys they have loaded up on that show, how they split it all up, because we have, you know, coming out of Royal Rumble, who will win that, the Elimination Chambers, and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
Speaking of CM Punk, we should talk about the main event of Raw 1000. It was the CM Punk John Cena match. John Cena cashing in his Money in the Bank briefcase with a week's notice. Of course, he's a babyface. He's not going to sneak up on somebody or try to surprise him. He's going to be face to face and tell them what he's going to do and when. And he ends up doing the match. And the finish is a lame disqualification when the Big Show ran in. And John Cena becomes the first man in history to attempt to cash in Money in the Bank and fail. First off, Mike, what are your thoughts on the way they handled that whole situation? I personally felt like that's a big deal, that this dude was the first guy to cash in Money in the Bank and fail. And I thought they made absolutely nothing of it. I thought it was just kind of a throwaway deal, and I was pretty disappointed with the way they handled that.
Yeah, I'm not surprised, but I thought it stunk. You know, I thought Cena was the only guy, really, that could go out there, lose that, you know, be the first one to lose, and not have it matter whatsoever. And it didn't matter if he got pinned. With everything else that went on, who would have remembered it anyway? I mean, it didn't matter, so why not just go ahead and do it? It's not like, you know, oh my God, Punk pinned Cena, what a terrible thing. Punk's in the middle of this massive reign anyway. You have him lay out the Rock with, you know, essentially one clothesline. So why not go ahead and do that? I mean, that's where they overthink. You know, sometimes they don't think at all. But when it comes to Cena, sometimes they overthink how that would have hurt him, I guess. Unless they're saving up, they really want to, they're billed to somebody cashing the thing in and getting pinned one day, which I don't think that's the case. It was more about protecting Cena. So I just, again, that little thing, and maybe it doesn't matter to the mainstream or anything like that. I guess maybe it doesn't, because the bigger thing was Punk turning on Cena and The Rock. I thought it was craptastic, even though, you know, again, I'm not too surprised by it.
Now, the CM Punk, whatever it was at the end, we'll say heel turn. They played it up big on television. CM Punk has turned on the WWE universe. And we had people that watched the show. We had people listening to this right now who thought it was not a CM Punk heel turn. And I know that over the weekend at the house shows, CM Punk has been getting a mixed reaction, some boos, some cheers. And when you watched the show, what were your thoughts as far as, was this a full-fledged heel turn or not?
Oh, well, I tweeted it right afterwards. It's just like, you know, I retweeted somebody who said, I hope they don't think people are going to boo Punk. And because there's a, you know, the portion that already hates The Rock or were to hate John Cena, they probably like Punk already. So this just galvanizes his base. He'll probably play this thing straight. I can't see him ripping the crowd or going back into being the truly patronizing Punk when he was feuding against Rey Mysterio and stuff like that. I think he'll just play it straight and, you know, hey, I had to win a match here. I thought about it. You know, it bothered me. But you know what? Don't blame me for this. I'm a competitor. So I think if you play it sporting, which they probably should, because, again, if you're going to cheer for Punk, you're going to cheer for Punk. If you're going to cheer for Rock and or John Cena, that's what you're going to do anyway. So, is it a heel turn? Kind of, sort of, yes. But really, it doesn't matter. He's going to get his cheers, and ultimately, at the end of the day, as long as he looks strong, it doesn't matter, because you bring up Chris Jericho's another one. People will cheer or boo them, you know, depending on who they're in there with. So as long as they stay strong, it really ultimately doesn't matter. And this isn't a big deal as far as, you know, CM Punk's now a dastardly heel.
Let's go back to the phones. You are on the air. Oh, you are not on the air. All right, going back to Punk, I believe that on Monday we're going to get, that being tomorrow, another one of those so-called pipe bomb promos, where he explains to people that I am the WWE champion. I have been the WWE champion for X number of months. I have not main evented a pay-per-view in all of 2012. And this guy, John Cena, blah, blah, blah. This guy, The Rock, blah, blah, blah. Full-scale heel promo turning on the fans. What are your thoughts?
Well, the whole thing with that, though, is he wrong? No. So you're going to get people that sympathize with him over it. It's not like, you know, those things would all be true. So again, if you're a Punk supporter, he's kind of just speaking the truth there. And again, unless he goes full bore into ripping people to absolute shreds, and again, even if he does that, he's still going to have his fans to cheer him. But I think you'll have to go a little bit stronger than that type of promo, because all you're doing is speaking the truth and pointing out things that we've talked about during the show. Well, hey, why does The Rock get to pop up like a Muppet and get a title shot at Royal Rumble? Why does he get to steal Punk's spotlight?
Hold that thought, Mike. Hold that thought. Hold that Muppet thought. Back in a moment. Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, who I rudely cut off in the last segment as we ran up against the break. I believe, Mike, you were talking about Rock being a Muppet.
Fired up.
Yeah.
Well, no, just from the aspect of, I don't know. What we talked about earlier on, the Rock just walks out there and he's in the Royal Rumble in the main event. You have that. You have people that already hate Cena anyway. So, you know, he lost. He shouldn't be in the mix anymore. So, I mean, CM Punk's going to have to come out with something, again, very hardcore than just speaking the truth about, you know, sometimes speaking the truth can make you a heel. But, again, when it comes to CM Punk, that's not going to make him a heel. That's just going to make people who are already fans of his, you know, get behind him more. And, again, he can turn around and, you know, play more. I think you'll get a better 50-50 reaction crowd between the Punk or CM Punk and The Rock than you will out of John Cena and The Rock. You know, it's just, again, two different groups that, and, you know, Punk can turn people on Rock. It's something Cena couldn't do, but I bet you Punk could, calling out the Hollywood and the fake teeth and, my, you got big all of a sudden, and all of this stuff that he could possibly say, which...
I don't think he's going to say that one.
Well, I know, but to WWE, how they would look at this as, yeah, Punk's really healing on him. Well, we're in reality, it's just, you know, people who already like Punk and who already know go, well, yeah, that's all true.
Raw last week.
He is big.
Actually, he's a lot less big now than he was the last picture I saw of him.
What movie is he doing, or was he doing? Because I guess, is that going to play a factor in SummerSlam as well as a G.I. Joe?
God, I don't even know what's coming out. He's done like a million movies. I don't even know which one is next to come out. But Raw last week did I think a 3.8 was the final number, 3.86 maybe. Anyway, point was, big number, 6.3 million viewers in hour two. 6 million viewers on average over the whole show. And obviously, they'd been building this up like a pay-per-view for a long, long time. And in your opinion, the show this coming Monday night, what do you expect the number to be? Just pick the viewership.
Oh, God. I just think back down to earth. It would be easier for me to pick the rating. I'll actually say like 3-4. I'll say 3-2. I think it's a significant drop down with the first hour being a big, big drag.
Let's go back to the phones. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is Eric from St. Cloud, Minnesota.
Eric, what's up?
I was wondering your guys' thoughts on if, this is just for Mike for a pre-94 question. How well do you guys think John Cena would have done during the territories days?
How John Cena would have done during the territorial days?
Yeah.
All right. I want to thank you for your call. The phone line is a little wacky, but Mike, your thoughts?
If he was in New York working for Vince, it would have been just the same. I mean, well, you know, a superhero type of character. Can you imagine him coming off of Superstar Graham instead of a Bob Backlund, even though days were different then? If he was working in Mid-South, he wouldn't last there very long because he couldn't wrestle. And it's different on the territory that you're in. You would just hope that an old-time promoter would look at, you know, all of his intangibles, much like WWE did, and just go, okay, yeah, he can't wrestle, but that doesn't matter. We can make lots of money with him because John Cena is serviceable. In the days of the territories in the 70s, no, he wouldn't be very good in comparison to a lot of those guys. But it, you know, his ability to make money, his look, his talk, that whole nine yards, you know, I think it could work in any era, just dependent on who the promoter would be.
All right, back to the phones. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is Matt from Pittsburgh.
Matt, what's up?
Hey, Brian, I was wondering, I was watching the Heart and Soul DVD today. I was just wondering if you guys heard anything on Jim Neidhart lately. He's had his issues with, had an issue back in Florida with some prescription pills. He looked pretty tweaked on that DVD.
I have not heard Jim Neidhart's name in probably a couple of years now. Mike, have you heard anything on Neidhart?
No, the last thing I'd really heard was just, you know, after the last arrest that happened again. It's probably, I guess it has been a couple years ago now, but after that, I really haven't heard anything.
Yeah, I don't see his name on Indies or anything like that. So, I mean, last, he was in TNA briefly, but that's the last that I remember.
If you guys look at that Heart and Soul DVD, when he's making some of his comments, he looks very, very shaky in that, so... just spurred to my attention. I just wondered if you guys had heard anything about him.
Do you remember when that DVD came out?
2008, 2009, somewhere around there.
Okay, so that was a couple of years before the arrest, so may have just he may have been having some big problems then, and they only got worse. I don't know how he's been doing the last couple of years, however.
Cool, thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, thanks very much. Really appreciate it. All right, back to the phones. You are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Rob. I'm calling from Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Rob, what's up?
Well, this week, Undertaker is still supposed to make his appearance at FCW. I'm just wondering, with these appearances and some of the photos that came out of him last month or last year, do you think this kind of signals the end of him really taking his character seriously and maybe the end of his career?
When you say he's, I mean, are they still advertising that? Because the last I'd heard, they pulled that advertising.
No, I believe he's going to be there on Wednesday.
All right. Yeah, I talked to somebody who was at the show Monday, and because I've been talking to them about the whole Undertaker showing up to sign at FCW, because I just found it like, when I first heard that Undertaker was going to be signing autographs at FCW, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. Undertaker's going to go to Florida Championship Wrestling and sit at a booth and sign autographs. I mean, it was just like, why? Why would Undertaker do this? But somebody who was at the show, we'd been talking about it, and they were just like, Undertaker was so relaxed backstage. He's just hanging out, and he's relaxed, and I would bet anything if they still have that, you know, if they're still planning on having him show up, that he's going to show up. And I saw a, Mike, did you see the picture that he took backstage with two guys? I forget who it was.
No, I didn't.
Oh, it was DX. I think it was DX.
It was DX.
Just Undertaker hanging out with DX, and he's smiling, and they took this big photo, and I don't know. I don't know if maybe he, you know, he's gotten to that point in his career where it's like, you know, I'm getting old, and now's the time to get out and see the people that have supported me or what the deal was. But, hey, I was surprised when I found out he was going to be doing it, and if they're still advertising it, I guess he's going to go out there. So that's
and
pretty
it
interesting.
It makes you think, too, him going into the Hall of Fame and actually doing a speech is a lot more likely now.
Oh, I'm sure he'll do a speech. I'm sure he'll do a speech. In fact, if you look online, I mean, there, I think it was RF Video. I'm not sure who did it, but several years ago, there actually was a shoot interview with The Undertaker where he's out of character and he's just talking about his career. And I remember watching it and I was just like, I was amazed by it because he's always been so protective of the character. But I mean, for sure he's going to do a speech for sure at the Hall of Fame induction whenever he goes in. I don't know how much he's going to say, but he'll do a speech for sure.
All right, thanks. Have a good show.
Are you heading down, by the way, for that?
Heading down for what?
For the meet and greet with Undertaker?
No, I'm not.
Okay, I was just gonna say, if you go, give me a report.
Well, next time I go to an event like that, I'll be sure to do that. But no, I won't be won't be there this time.
All right, that sounds good. Well, thanks very much for the call. I really appreciate it.
Hey, Brian.
Yo.
Jim Neidhart in this past March was arrested for contempt of court to respond. I guess he didn't show for the pre-existing charges he had in September of 2010, where he was arrested on drug burglary and theft charges.
That's right, when he tried to steal he was trying to steal pills from an old lady, right?
Yeah, and then the one in April where he was driving around with without a valid driver's license in an unregistered vehicle. So, yeah, I guess he was arrested early on in March, but I guess that's the last thing that's come from him.
That's not good. That is not good. I wanted to mention quickly regarding Raw, my thoughts on the number. I think it's going to do a little bit better than you predicted. I think that they shot a big angle. And I think a lot of people, more than your average, I'm not saying that it's going to do another 6 million viewers or anything like that, but I would say the show's probably going to do a healthy 5 million. The one thing I'll say about Raw that I don't think I've mentioned on any of the shows I've done this week is they really played up big this Raw 1000. And it was amazing because usually on a 3-hour Raws, everybody forgets to tune in at 8 Eastern, 5 Pacific. They always, you know, there's always a probably 30-40% of the viewership, actually probably less than that, probably 25%, that forgets it's on an hour early. That did not happen here. Everybody tuned in at the very start of the show and they watched it all the way through. I know they mentioned it, but I don't think they hammered home nearly enough that Raw is starting an hour earlier every week from now on. I mean, that should have been hammered home, like, literally in every single segment, every 5 minutes. Because I just pictured this week's show opening up and people forgetting it starts an hour early.
I agree completely, and that's what I think is going to drag some things down a little bit. And I think there's just also still, even you can be the hardest core wrestling watcher and watch every week, you could come in and know at 8:30, 8:45, or afterwards in many cases, and know you're really not going to miss a beat because you got two more hours left.
Let's talk about some of the other news. We got the rest of this segment and one more segment to go. Any thoughts on the Olympics thus far?
Yeah, Japan's not having a good time. I can say that is been through a couple rounds now. The women's judo 48 kilogram, which is 106 pounds. Throughout most of this, the Japanese were expected to do well. Obviously, it's quote unquote their sport. But they've had problems, and even though they've medaled a couple times, a couple things have gone on here. As a whole, the team has not done well, and there's been some upsets. The most notable ones being Masato Nakamura at the 115-pound division, who was supposed to win for the women but was knocked out in the second round and wasn't able to medal at all. And then Masashi Ibanuma, who got a controversial victory over a South Korean, which ended up giving him the bronze medal. He was expected to do much, much better than he did. And there was some controversy as they had to overrule the original mat decision, and they went and reviewed the entire match and ended up giving it to him, which got him in and winning that bronze medal. So not been a good run right now for the Japanese.
We're going to head to a break. Back in just a moment, Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We are here every Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network Sirius. Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com, and I'm very pleased to welcome the Ohio Sports Radio Network at OhioSportsRadioNetwork.net. Big thank you to Dave Reed and Doug Brown. If you are a station manager looking to add Wrestling Observer Live to the lineup, contact me, Brian, at WrestlingObserver.com. That's B-R-Y-A-N at WrestlingObserver.com, and I will get you in touch with the appropriate people. And, of course, if you love this program and you only get here once per week, you are missing out. Daily radio shows up at WrestlingObserver.com. Tens of thousands of hours of audio in our members-only archives. It's only $10.99 per month. If you sign up, we do anything from 15 to 20 brand-new radio shows every single week. And every show we have ever done is available in our archives right now. So if you take 15 to 20 shows, multiply that by 7 years, I believe, 2005 we launched. Every single one of those shows is in the archives. You can download them. You can have them automatically downloaded to your iPod, iPad, iPhone, whatever your radio program, podcast, listening software of choice might be. I don't know what I just said right there. But you can download those to your listening device. And we have free radio shows available up at WrestlingObserver.com. Scroll down the right-hand side of the page. A listing of our latest 3 free radio shows up there for you to check out and sample. Listen to them. Judge the content, the audio quality, and if you like what you hear, sign up today. Only $10.99 a month. That's a lunch. And for that price, for a full month, you can sample all of the audio that we have up at WrestlingObserver.com. We are here with Mike Sempervivi talking all of the news. And Mike, I was in the woods last week. I did not see UFC Calgary. I came home. I saw that Dana White was outraged. I read the feedback to the show. Everyone thought the show sucked. And when I asked Dave Meltzer if I should watch the show, and he said, no, I knew the show was bad. What did you think, Mike?
Yeah, it's one of those things, you know, the DVR space can be at a premium in my household. And it's rare, though, still, when I take a UFC and an undercard and immediately just go ahead and delete it right off as I won't want to see it again. And I'll go back and dig it back up if I absolutely have to. And that was the case. The undercard for the show was very good. 2 Facebook fights, which were good, and they ended up on the FX show anyway. So for free, you certainly got your money's worth by watching 6 pretty good bouts, some better than the others. But then the main card started, and you know, it was UFC 149 was arguably, in fact, it probably was the most jinxed show in canvas matted sports history that still continued to go on. and still and probably got the number that it got. There's very rare where, you know, anybody would have watched this. And I don't think the show is going to do great pay-per-view-wise. I think it'll actually do less than the Brazil show. But the fact that anybody was able to pay money for it at all was a testament to Uriah Faber and Brow, which ended up being, you know, people booed. But the fact of the matter is they should have been actually been cheering Brow's athleticism, because it's not like Faber didn't try. There was just nothing he was going to be able to do to get inside on Brow, and what we had predicted, you know, went ahead and came true. It's Faber can beat a lot of guys, but he's going to have trouble with those, you know, with the champions, and he most certainly had a problem with Brow. But with that said, even though people were, you know, angry over the fact that Brow had such a dominant performance without finishing Faber, who is incredibly tough to finish, for God's sakes, Brow and Cruz, when he comes back off his knee injury, is going to be something else, and I hope there's no Cruz is going to be really confident coming back and really is going to be mentally where he wants to be with that knee, because it's going to be a daunting task. This isn't like Chris Weidman and Anderson Silva coming up where, yes, it's a fresh-faced guy. It's somebody who, you know, UFC wants to be a star, and he's somebody who, you know, the company can build around, and wouldn't it be great if he won? You know, Brow's been around for a while now, and it's not, you know, what if he won? It's, you know, there's a really good chance he could win and be as dominant of a champion as his teammate Jose Aldo is. So, again, big test for Cruz, and it's going to be a big, big fight. I'm sure you'd have to put it on a pay-per-view with something else on there to get people to buy it, but I certainly will, even if that was the only thing.
What do you think of the potential for... Actually, let me go to this. Let me take this call here. This guy's been on the line for a while. Then I'll ask you this question. You are on the air, Wrestling Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, Tyler from Kentucky.
Tyler, what's up?
I was wondering if you guys saw the Invicta FC event last night, the all-female organization.
I did not, but I heard all about it.
It was really good. It made me think, like, could you ever see Zuffa possibly buying it and putting it on Fuel? So after the Showtime deal's done, it'll be a place for Ronda and Cyborg and et cetera to possibly go to?
It's possible, but I think that it's more likely that if the whole Strikeforce deal falls through, we'll actually see occasional women's fights on UFC pay-per-views. Because I think they recognize that, like, Ronda Rousey is kind of getting to be a big star. I mean, you know, she doesn't have the you know, being on Showtime, she's not going to have the exposure she would have elsewhere. But, I mean, you're talking somebody that actually made one of six collector's covers for the ESPN Body magazine. And I think that they would be more likely to try to put her on a major UFC pay-per-view or even on Fox than to buy another company that she'd work for that would be, for example, as you noted, on Fuel, where nobody was going to see it. Mike, what are your thoughts on this?
I would much rather see them, you know, cherry pick the best fights that they can and put them on pay-per-views or put them on FX shows or Fox shows or something like that. I think they need to expand out their view of women fighting far, far more than they do. I mean, there's so many good ones out there that, you know, Kaufman and Conan, there's enough of them out there, but I don't think there's enough interest from Zuffa. And I get, if they go ahead and buy Invicta, it's to buy a piece of history and to make sure they have the video rights and all that sort of stuff. I just can't conceive of them being, you know, wanting to set something aside. And I don't think Showtime would want it either. I mean, yeah, the women's fights have gotten them some of their biggest shows ever, but in their biggest ratings ever. But I don't think it's something that anybody altogether would be too interested in.
That was the Invicta FC show. It was available on internet pay-per-view, and apparently there were some problems. I guess a lot of people all tried to order the show at the same time, so it was kind of like the ROH show where they had those problems with everybody trying to log in at the same time. But heard it was a great show, and so there were some awesome fights on the show. It's an all-women's promotion, and they're going to be promoting their first championship match at the next show, which is coming up in a couple of months. I believe Invicta FC is the place to go, the website. But if you're a fan of women's MMA, there's some big names. Shayna Baszler was on that show, and something you might want to check out for the future. And you didn't get a chance to see it yet, Mike, did you?
No, I started watching it. I didn't see all of it yet, but I was actually watching the Dragon Gate USA pay-per-view from last night. And, you know, basically I took advantage of the fact that the entire Invicta FC show is available up on their YouTube channel today. So I was going to check that out. And, again, I like Invicta and I really like what they're doing. And really they're trying to self-promote themselves and really get themselves out there so people become more comfortable with women's MMA. But from the UFC's point of view, from Zuffa's point of view, from a television point of view, I would just cherry pick as much as you could. But definitely make money with Ronda Rousey if you can. I mean, it's such an antiquated, stupid thing. We saw it with women's boxing, too. I mean, it's just such an antiquated thought that, you know, we don't want to see women in MMA or we don't want to take advantage of having matches, even though the divisions that they may fight in aren't incredibly deep. That kind of logic doesn't make any sense to me right now. Again, especially when it comes to Zuffa as a whole, needing more superstars to drive more pay-per-view buys and to garner more interest.
Before that caller, I was going to ask you about the potential of a Nick Diaz-Anderson Silva fight. Diaz has expressed interest in fighting either at a catchweight or, he said, he would be willing to move up to 185 to face Anderson Silva. And it's actually a rather interesting fight. How do you break it down?
I break it down like I wish Jeff Osborne would start back hook and shoot so we could have a tag team match that also included Cesar Gracie and Ed Soares as well. I think that would actually be fantastic to hear them. I tell you, it's a hell of a fight for Nick Diaz, and it is a very interesting fight. If I'm Anderson Silva, I don't come down. I make Nick Diaz go up in weight because it can be a very – I think Anderson Silva wins, but that could still be a very dangerous fight for him to have. So if I were him, I don't cut. I make him come up to 185 to fight me, and I pack on weight afterwards because obviously he cuts, and I know he walks around at like 220 or so. But why give Nick Diaz any more than you should?
I think that the chance of that fight going to the ground would be slim. I just don't see Diaz getting him down there. And then it comes down to the famous stand-up pit-a-pat fighting style of Nick Diaz, which, as much as I've made fun of Diaz in the past for landing 500 shots in a round, but not really landing 500 power shots or anything like that, he has knocked guys out. And he would be facing a guy with significantly better stand-up technique. I just think it's a really interesting fight.
Yeah, Silva's been so good and so sharp, and again, I don't know, as good as that style is for Nick Diaz and as impressive as it is for both he and his brother for that matter too, I don't think stylistically with the reach that Silva has in the whole nine yards and the sharpness of his strikes, I don't think Diaz's style is going to be very conducive to doing well, because I don't think he's going to have the ability and the time to get all 500 shots. And the fact of the matter is, even if he does, how many of them are really going to be able to land on Silva, who is significantly quicker?
You watched some of the Dragon Gate USA pay-per-views, you noted, and Johnny Gargano, the current champion of the organization, defended his title successfully against Akira Tozawa. I suspect that match was awesome. I haven't had a chance to see it yet. I'm a huge fan of Akira Tozawa. And afterwards, he cut a promo and he essentially said, there'd been a lot of talk, by the way, of him going to WWE. And he cut a promo and said that Dragon Gate USA had offered him a new deal earlier in the day. And as much as he wanted to appear at WrestleMania someday, he had signed his contract extension. So he is staying with Dragon Gate USA, not going to WWE. WWE has signed Pac of Dragon Gate USA and Dragon Gate Japan fame, and he'll be heading to Tampa soon to get going. And what were your thoughts on the pay-per-view, the portion that you've watched thus far?
I watched it almost up until that match, actually, because I don't think there was anything after A.R. Fox and Sima against El Generico and Samurai Del Sol. That was if you liked Dragon Gate, you're a Dragon Gate fan, that was a really, really excellent match with lots of fun stuff, very crisp and sharp. And again, I heard the same thing about Gargano and Tozawa, so after we're done the show, I'm going to watch that because I've heard nothing but good things about it. Now, the lead up to that, the six matches that happened prior were, you know, really nothing all that important happened. John Davis continues on with his winning streak, and they did play up Gargano and Chuck Taylor throughout the broadcast as well. They've introduced Masada in. which Eric Cannon, they faked out that he was going to join up with that group, and then Sed Reisel's Pinky Sanchez, and what was really a bad bout. And again, nothing really, there was nothing pressing that you had to go out of your way to see, I think, on the undercard. But I'll say this, the tag match, from the main event sounds good, but I can say this about the tag match. If you're a Dragon Gate fan, you should probably check out the Freedom Gate bout that A.R. Fox and SEMA won over Generico and Samurai Del Sol.
Very quickly, what was so bad about the Pinky Sanchez match?
It's just the crowd crapped on it. Nobody really understood what Masada was actually doing there. It wasn't a good match. The fans were sitting on their hands, and it just went on for longer than it should have.
Back in a moment, Wrestling Observer Live, Sports Byline, Broadcasting Network. We are back here for the final segment of the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com. Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here on Wrestling Observer Live every Sunday, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Sports Byline USA Radio Network, Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 94, XM Radio Channel 208, streaming live worldwide on the internet at WrestlingObserver.com. There is another Dragon Gate Eye pay-per-view tonight. You can check it out, WWNLive.com. Head up there. That's the only big pay-per-view taking place this evening. No WWE, no TNA. So check that out at WWNLive.com. And Mike, before we went on the air, a little bit before we went on the air, low-key... lost his championship over in Japan. Give everybody the update. Michael?
Hello. In a way, this is a reset a little bit for New Japan. Kota Ibushi won the title today. He had won the Best of the Super Junior in 2011, then went on to win the title from Prince Devitt. He ended up dislocating his left shoulder and was stripped of the title, or actually had to vacate the title. Devitt ended up winning it and has held it up until Loki won it in May. That was probably done because they did not want Devitt to lose to Ibushi for what would have been, the fourth time in a row. The title match, a rematch, a tag match, and that would end up being the fourth one, and they didn't exactly want to do that. So Loki got the title when he went over there. Kota Ibushi now has it again. And after a year, we've kind of got a little bit of a reset.
Were you sucked into the vortex there?
I was indeed.
Were you eaten by Bigfoot?
I have a feeling that he actually ate you, and this whole thing has been a scam, and I'm getting like some Bigfoot telepathy coming from you that will actually drive me to check myself into anger management.
That's right. I'm going to have you committed. All right, everybody. That's the end of the show today. I want to thank everybody for listening. I'd like to thank everybody who called in today. I'd like to thank all of our affiliates as well, all the folks at Sports Byline USA, and thank Mike. We'll be back later tonight, actually. Dave Meltzer is going to be on the show, Wrestling Observer Radio, only at WrestlingObserver.com for subscribers. So if you want more, check that out. We'll be talking all the news from the weekend, preview Raw tomorrow. And, of course, tons of shows coming up in the week. So we'll be back next week with a brand new show. Thanks again, everybody. Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.